The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Good evening, listeners, brave navigators of the enigmatic and the concealed. Have you ever felt the pull of the unanswered, the allure of the mysteries that shroud our existence? For more than a decade, a unique comic publisher has dared to dive into these mysteries, unafraid of the secrets they might uncover. This audacious entity is Paranoid American. Welcome to the mystifying universe of the Paranoid American podcast.
Launched in the year 2012, Paranoid American has been on a mission to decipher the encrypted secrets of our world. From the unnerving enigma of MKUltra mind control to the clandestine assemblies of secret societies. From the awe-inspiring frontiers of forbidden technology to the arcane patterns of occult symbols in our very own pop culture. They have committed to unveiling the concealed realities that lie just beneath the surface. Join us as we navigate these intricate landscapes, decoding the hidden scripts of our society and challenging the accepted perceptions of reality.
Folks, I've got a big problem on my hands. There's a company called Paranoid American making all these funny memes and comics. Now, I'm a fair guy. I believe in free speech, as long as it doesn't cross the line. And if these AI-generated memes dare to make fun of me, they're crossing the line.
This is your expedition into the realm of the extraordinary, the secret, the shrouded. Come with us as we sift through the world's grand mysteries, question the standardized narratives, and brave the cryptic labyrinth of the concealed truth. So strap yourselves in, broaden your horizons, and steel yourselves for a voyage into the enigmatic heart of the Paranoid American podcast, where each story, every image, every revelation brings us one step closer to the elusive truth.
Okay, another episode, Paranoid American Podcast. As you can see, everyone's already up on the screen. We're not popping through the window because we've already had a conspiracy pilled on this show a little while ago. And we did the whole like 1 to 10 gamut, and we didn't get the follow-up on a lot of them because I've usually run that towards the end. So first of all, Abby and PJ from Conspiracy Pilled Podcast, one of the most like variety-filled podcasts. So you guys get into every topic that I really love, but you've also got a perspective that's way different than mine. So I'm happy to get into, I've got like a laundry list of just random stuff that we're going to maybe get into. Tangents, welcome. But you guys are welcome. Tell people where they can find you and what you do.
Well, thank you for having us back. We really enjoyed being on here last time. Yeah, the best way to find us, just go to conspiracypill.com. You can pretty much find out everything from there. Our main hub for where to watch our stuff is on Rumble. And if you want to listen to us anywhere, we're on every podcast catcher you can think of, so pretty easy to find.
Yes, we are online.
We are on the internet.
Yes, go to the internet and search.
Welcome, man. We're living in the future right now.
Yeah.
And I noticed that. Well, we'll just get this one out of the way first because we focused on it a little bit last time you were here, and I saw that you guys have had a number of episodes on Nephilim, and I also got to speak to Gary Wayne for the first time since we talked.
Oh, nice.
So I had a couple of like very specific questions on Nephilim that I wanted to know if you guys have any thoughts on.
Okay.
Sure.
One of them was Gary had suggested this concept that I haven't been able to get out of my head, that Nephilim were almost like the women Nephilim, the ones that were capable of producing Nephilim, were somehow like these coveted like place that you would go to start your empire. So if you wanted to start a new country or a new empire, you'd have to like hunt out the Nephilim queen or whatever.
It's like a Nephilim starter pack.
Exactly. And then that way that your first, you know, wave of progeny would kind of be these like Nephilim style giants for very practical, like physical means. You ever heard that before? I might even be misinterpreting it. If I am, I'm going to claim that as my theory.
No, it's great. We have not had Gary Wayne on our show. I just haven't asked him. I should ask him at some point. But he's written more on the Nephilim than anybody.
What's your beef with Gary Wayne, by the way?
Let's get into that. I don't have any beef with him at all. Okay, cool. No, I like Gary Wayne. To be honest, the reason I haven't asked him on yet is because I need to read both of his books, and they're very long. And I don't want to invite him on and just be like, so I know you talk about Nephilim, but I never read all your books
that's
all
the way through.
They're pretty, yeah, that's what everybody does. I should. I'm weird like that. If I talk to somebody, I want to read everything they've written. I have not read any of your books yet, but I am going to buy a Nephilim Portal Baby toy. Is that available already?
I've got like three more I just added. They go pretty quick. Yeah.
Okay. I need to buy one of those. So I'll do that.
So I was thinking about, you know, like the Nephilim starter pack. Do you think that's even valid? Does that have any weight to you?
I'm going to let Abby answer this first.
Okay. What I will tell you is off topic, but there is a royal family line in Europe. I think it's like Switzerland or around that area that traces its lineage back to a mermaid.
So yes,
is my answer.
Redheaded mermaid, sense. You think?
Yeah. Probably.
A redheaded mermaid?
See, I think that mermaids are the female version, or at least part of the female version of Nephilim. Potentially.
Yeah. There's the other version too, which is that they are the women who the Nephilim originally slept with and then were cursed and became sirens or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. I think that they can still pass the...
I just love the idea of a Nephilim starter pack that I'm just going to say yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, but I think
you
got to
go
theory.
And buy enough, and then if you pop that like rare, then all of a sudden you get the start of civilization.
Exactly. Yeah. The holographic version. Yeah. Rare holographic card.
It would, if there are female Nephilim, they've got to be like 25% and under, right? Of fallen angel DNA.
Why would they have to be 25%?
Because all the original males of the fallen angels were 100% fallen angel, and then they slept with just women. I don't think that there's any 100% female fallen angels. So any
that would
original,
still be 50% though.
You're right. Yeah. Math. Girl math. Math. I'm
it's all
girl
good.
Math.
You're a woman, that. So we'll let it slide this time. Yeah.
So and this would also explain that it would have been smaller than the original giants that came down. So, but all you really need is just a little bit of head. I mean, look at basketball, right?
You know,
look
what?
At how much if the entire team is just what 2 inches taller than the other team, they have boxing, they have an insane advantage over inches. And if we're talking a couple of feet instead of inches and you apply it to the battlefield, now all of a sudden it sounds like we're cooking with gas.
Yeah, 100%. Also, I did not catch the full context of this comment, but we just talked to Joel Thomas recently about Nephilim, and he said something about Nephilim turkey basters, so something about impregnating giant women. So I'm guessing that there has to be some truth to this.
Yeah.
It takes a village, like literally when it
literally
comes to the Nephilim.
And a ladder and a turkey baster. Yeah. Nephilim starter pack.
Oh no.
That's okay, included in the Nephilim starter pack is the ladder and the turkey baster.
The ladder and the turkey baster. Oh no.
We'll leave it on a high on top of the top rung of the ladder. And last time we were talking, I also had you guys do a couple 1 through 10, and there was a couple that we didn't get to that I wanted to just explore in a little bit more detail. The first one, I could see you both squirming because there was no context allowed. You had to just come up with a number.
Oh yeah.
And the question was, we are 6,000 years old. And I think that PJ, you gave me like a 7 and Abby gave a 10. So she was just like, you know, like balls to the wall. But like you were squirming of like, man, there's no context here. So give me the context that you wish were there if you were making a case of the Earth being millions of years versus thousands of years.
So the only reason I squirm is because I believe that humanity is 6,000 years old. I'm open-ended on the idea of how old the Earth is.
How do you find humanity?
Well, I mean, like Adam on down, like from humans. I don't really believe in the whole evolved from ape thing. But like, yeah, no, I think we actually recently talked to Jim Barfield, who laid out this, like he basically just took everything in the Bible literally from as far as lineages go.
Genealogy.
And genealogy, yeah. Thank you. And when he laid it out, honestly, instead of like all of the, well, the hemming and hawing that you get from the community, you know, the historians and stuff like that, they're like, well, does this really, it actually adds up in some really interesting ways. And it makes so much more things make sense. But yeah, that's where I'm at. I believe that humanity from Adam on down, I believe like the literal 6,000 years there. I'm open to how long the 7 days actually could be, if it was periods of time, or we've have other theories we're going to get into deeper in the future of like when things started counting as far as, you know, creation and stuff like that. But I'm open-ended on that. That's why I give it a 7. I think Abby's like a 10 all the way across. So
I like that. Okay. Conviction.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
Thanks. let's see. So Einstein's theory.
We've been having this conversation. Yeah, we've been having this
conversation. Einstein's theory of relativity suggests that time expands at the same rate as the universe. So if you are looking at a Big Bang theory, either an atheist Big Bang theory or a God said let there be light, and that's the beginning, and the universe has been expanding ever since in that. Like God-centric Big Bang. Either way, if you have the universe expanding from a point, Einstein's idea was that time would expand at the same rate as the universe. So if you were God looking at the whole storyline from the beginning, it would be six literal days and the Earth would be 6,000 years old and all that. But if you were a piece of dust that was at the very edge of the expansion, so you started at the beginning and you have been expanding this whole time, 16 million years would have passed for you if time is relative like that. So that I'm okay with. But
okay.
from like a biblical standpoint of...
That sounded way smarter than anything I said.
I agree.
I try.
You should let Abby lead for now.
I should, yeah.
But no, I tend to take... Whenever I read the Bible, I tend to take a pretty literal view of like if it says 6 days, it's 6 days. And it's pretty rare that I think something other than the plain reading.
So. The most annoying question that I can think of when it comes to like literal biblical interpretation, do you believe in talking snakes? Do you think a snake talk?
Yes. The question,
I like that. I like not squirming around it.
The biggest question is it, was it a 100% snake, or is this was it a possessed snake? But it says the snake talked, and it doesn't say, and some spirit descended upon the snake and it talked. So I tend to think it was an actual snake.
I so the word is Nahash, and it's there's also words around the seraphim angels. If am I saying it right, the seraphim angels also using the same word as snake. So yeah. I tend to think it's more dragon like. I think it's a fallen angel entity that's snake like. But yeah, I mean, well, so the answer is yes, but I'm not thinking of a gardener snake or garter snake. I think is what you call them, or like a boa constrictor or something. I'm thinking like something snake-like, but definitely fallen angel, so it could be whatever. I mean, I guess that's kind of
the curse for the snake was that it would have to go on its belly. So whatever it was when it talked was not what we have now. It definitely, at least had legs.
What language do you think it was talking in? Like, what was the language in the Garden of Eden?
Pre-Babel. So
yes,
nothing we know now.
There was, I can't even remember what it was, but we went to that convention and they were talking about like the oldest language and all the possibilities of it being like a pre-flood language.
Sanskrit.
Is it Sanskrit? It's something along those lines where it's like there was evidence. This was coming from a not Christian source, but like the agreement seemed to be that there was a universal language that, in their belief, this was like an Anunnaki conference. So it was like, you know, fallen angel type stuff.
But the original Métis conference.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. it was called CPAC, but it wasn't like conservative pack. It was like, yeah, with
the
K.
Wrong CPAC.
So it was CPAC. About pyramids and stuff. It was Graham Hancock conference, essentially.
Yeah. It was good. We had a good time.
But it was fun.
The idea is that Sanskrit is the most literal language that we know of. It's the most strictly, like each word is strictly word for word, as opposed to Hebrew, which is very metaphorical. Each word is very broad. It
means like multiple things at the same time, or has multiple interpretations. Yeah,
but Sanskrit is like almost a computer in how.
Like more so than even English, which English is hard, I guess, for some people to learn because it's got so many words compared to like, you know, you just have like one word that means kind of a general concept.
That's why I speak American. We have less words than English.
Yep.
American is
American
is the best
way better. Yeah.
Oh, and if we keep going with like the literal interpretation of the Bible, is this happening? Let's just say it could be a seraphim, it could be a dragon, it could be a snake, mm-hmm. could be anything at all. Is that happening on like the planet that we exist on now too? Or was it in like a slightly more spiritual, ethereal version? Or is it like the dirt that was under, you know, Adam and Eve's feet is potentially the same dirt under our feet?
I love this question.
That is a really good question, actually. I don't think it's the same earth in a certain way, in a metaphysical way. Yeah. I believe, you know, I'm going to butcher this, but in Revelation, it talks about, I think a lot of people miss this, where they think that the earth is, they think of it in a very Gnostic way. A lot of Christians even fall into this, think of it in a very Gnostic way, that we're all just going to leave the earth behind and that, you know, we're all going to become spiritual beings up in the sky. But the Bible is very clear that we're going to get new bodies, that heaven is going to come down to earth, and we're going to inhabit this earth the way that Genesis was supposed to be inhabited. But that idea of heaven coming down to earth, I think that means that that's what it was originally. I tend to think of the movie Constantine for like a visual understanding. Have you ever seen the movie Constantine?
Yeah, it's also based on a phenomenal comic book, which is better than the movie.
Yeah, exactly. But in the movie, the visualization of heaven and hell is so fascinating because they're literal realms layered on top of each other. So in order to see heaven or hell, it's not moving physical distance. It's not like in the earth and in the clouds. It's more layered in like a kaleidoscopic kind of way. And I think that that full emergence of heaven and earth in is more of a realm concept or like an overlaying of realities than it is physical different places, like different planets and things like that. So do I think it was the same physical earth? Not really in a metaphysical way. I think it was more, I think those things have been separated since. And that's my belief. I don't know.
Yeah. If you think about it in terms of like the veil is down right now. But if the veil was lifted on the spiritual world, we could see everything. I think that that's how it was. So I think of Eden as being probably, I think it had a physical location, but I think even if you went there now, you couldn't see it because the veil is down. But it's almost like the mythological conception of fairyland. Like you'd have to, sometimes you can just walk into fairyland, but it's not quite there the same way that other places are there. And you kind of have to go through a portal of some sort.
Do you think it's possible technology could ever fill that gap or even show that that gap exists?
I think so.
If especially if you think that the fallen angels are the ones that are handing us the technology, absolutely.
Right.
Is that what you think?
Yeah.
I believe, you know, in a lot of ways, yeah. That's the whole idea of Enoch. That's where all the Nephilim thing comes from it's not where Nephilim comes from. It's Genesis 6:4, but like the expanded understanding of Nephilim that people are generally talking about, that Gary Wayne is talking about, comes from the book of Enoch. And in that, it talks about all of the technologies that were given to humans specifically from fallen angels. So when you've got people saying things like, hey, we have AI, we just don't literally know what it does or how it does or where it comes from. The people who are creating it, that's interesting to me. And then you look back through people who came up with computers and the concept of computers before even electronics were really a thing. They were all calling it demons and, you know, like ghosts in the machine type thing. So the idea that these things are animated by something that we don't fully understand and we just kind of accept that everybody, you know, figured out how to do microscopic silicone and gold plated chips to make ones and zeros make magic. Like, to me, I'm like looking at this going like, I'm not the smartest person in the world, but like that sounds like technology that was handed to people. Who comes up with this? I don't know, man.
How far back do you think this could go? Could we say that like the abacus was given to humans by Nephilim or demons?
So I keep seeing that clip from the three body problem and I have not watched it yet with the human abacus.
I haven't seen it either.
Okay. But have you seen the clip that everybody's sharing around?
I haven't, no. I tried watching the first 10 minutes and like my girlfriend wasn't into it. So I'm going to have to find like my own.
Yeah, I thought that's what you're referencing. It. I haven't watched it yet either. But
no, I'm just wondering because technology to me, yeah. I mean, technology is language, like written language, like Sanskrit right. we were talking about. Mm. To me, that's technology. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how congruent that is with, well, if technology comes from the fallen angels, then. Like, I guess the snake talking to Adam and Eve, maybe that was the first instance of technology and language, unless it predated that.
We were literally having this conversation an hour ago, me and Abby were on the phone. But like I think that when you're handing down stories to a post flood world and you're like, let's say you're Noah and his sons and you lived in a world full of technology and advancement and all this stuff, and then it's all wiped away and you're trying to explain it to people. How are you ever going to explain it to people? So I think that there's plenty of room for like things in the, you know, pre-flood biblical text or Mesopotamian or whatever mm-hmm. text you're looking at to be trying to relay concepts of high technology. And there was a guy that we met again at CPAC who basically proved that these old pots from that were definitely dated before they would call it the Ice Age or the Flood or to whoever you're talking to, depending on what they believe. These are like, back during the pyramids, you know, the original pyramids, again, the belief system there is also they were built a long time before modern people think they were built. But anyway, that were proven, like essentially could not have been made without computer technology, like advanced CNC machines. Like we're talking millimeters, like micrometers, mm-hmm. thin differences on these super complex designs, like completely even, like even modern day machining probably couldn't quite get it as perfect as these things are. He laid it all out. I'm doing a bad job. He was on Joe Rogan podcast talking about it too. He was there with Jimmy Corsetti. I cannot think of his name. But basically I think it's very convincing. His whole idea that there was pre-flood or computers, technology, stuff like that. And I think it's interesting too, because a lot of the belief system there is we base all of our technology on electronics, on the, you know, on the electron and all of that. But there's tons of different ways to do computers, whether it's pneumatic or chemical or this or that or the other. And it's very possible and very likely that we have a hard time even understanding ancient technology because everything we do is based on an electric grid. And if a society had based everything on pneumatics or chemical, one lady had her whole theory about water, which was pretty weird, that we just wouldn't be able to like back engineer that technology anyway, because we just don't have the same system.
If you look at like Greek mythology, where the Prometheus comes down and gives mm-hmm. humans fire, and then he's punished for it by the gods for giving humans something, you could make the argument that everything has been handed to us by the fallen angels. Or
farming in almost all cultures, ancient cultures, you know, the whole idea of societies in general are talked about as being brought to them by the gods.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that what's described in Genesis is that Adam and Eve walked with God in the garden and talked with him. And so I would probably say that not every single bit of knowledge was from a bad source, that there was conversation with Yahweh, and who knows what type of thing he wanted to share with people and what path he preferred that they take. And I don't think that that would have been a technology-less, ape-level intelligence type of a world. So,
right.
Yeah.
As blasphemous as this sounds, I try to make it not sound like this, but like pre-tree of good and evil, like knowledge and humans gaining any extra technology or information outside of just God. Mm-hmm. How interesting do you think those conversations were between Adam and Eve and God? Like, are they telling God anything that he doesn't know? Is it just like perpetually talking with like a toddler that just learned how to make noises, and it's like you're infatuated with it because it's your kid, but if it was someone else's kid, you'd be like, get this kid away from me.
I think
go ahead, Abby.
I wouldn't say a toddler, but that level of innocence of not having a concept of there's a difference between good and evil. It's all good, right? It's all good. It's all I'm sorry, PJ.
I said Saul Goodman.
Saul Goodman. Yeah, that. So I don't think it would have been childish in most of the way that you would think of childish, but very innocent. I'm trying to think if there's like a mythology of innocence where you would.
Well, because I'm trying to think from the perspective of both, like from God to Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
I could see that being interesting. And like you're talking to your kid and you're just like, wow, look at how you see this world in front of these eyes that I don't really remember. But then also from Adam and Eve, I just imagine them just like constantly looking at each other like, do you understand anything this guy is saying? Like, I don't really get it, you know?
I don't really get it. Yeah.
No, I think that's entirely valid. Yeah, 100%. I even considering that I generally think that it's the opposite of what we've been taught, is that humans are basically getting smarter. I think all the evidence is actually the opposite. I think the humans were probably generally smarter and have gotten kind of dumber over time.
I kind of wonder too, because
our over-reliance on technology alone makes us kind of dumber.
And we are so easily fooled. I know it's almost like a trope, and I mention it a lot, but the fact that the human eye can see like less than like 0.3% of the visible light spectrum. Like maybe we're just like really easily fooled by everything, and we're so convinced that we're so advanced that, and like even you were saying before that like these pots were discovered, and you know it had to have come from some advanced technology because they're like millimeters difference. It's like, but on a certain scale, millimeter might as well be a mile, you know, if you understood precision, if you had like, you know, a deeper understanding of the material you're working with, millimeters and even nanometers shouldn't even really matter. But if that impresses you, it's maybe just because we are easily impressed by stuff.
Yeah, that's very, very possible. I think I said it a little wrong because he was saying it was like the width of a paper difference. But yeah, I mean, still, you're right. Like even micrometers to a certain advanced technology, you'd be like, oh, that's shoddy work there.
Yeah, it's not, you know what I mean? They'll put this thing together. Okay, well, and also speaking of advanced technology, one of the other questions that we went over was celebrity clones. And I think, PJ, you were like a 7 and Abby was a 5, or I might have reversed those. I think that I got those right. So I wanted to let you.
Probably right. I think I'm more open to celebrity clones than Abby is.
So kick your feet up a little bit and give a little bit more context on, and I want to dig in a little bit on some specifics, but just, celebrity clones, what makes you give them a 7?
Oh, man. I can't remember his name, but there was like a few years ago, there was that rapper who was basically like putting this out there. He's like, look, they basically just clone us and kill us and like, you know, all this thing. And I was like, I mean, on one sense, like on a metaphorical sense,
might have been
they're
Coolio.
Essentially, I wasn't Coolio. I was a newer guy. But on like one sense, it's like, yeah, I mean, every rap song in the last 20 years has been the exact same cadence. It's been the exact same rhyming pattern. It's all really just done over and over and over again, and all I have to do is get a fresh new tattooed face up there, you know, for a few years, and they kill him and his album sells, and they just kind of like rinse and repeat. But then he started going into like all this clone aid stuff and all the Raelian things and things like that, and I mean, it's wild. I'm not sure if I like really buy into it, but I'm open to the idea of cloning. I don't know, man. It's one of those things that I want to dig more into. I don't believe that Taylor Swift is a clone. But I do think
she's one of a kind. Don't you dare say that she can be replicated.
You know what's hilarious about this? We did an episode about if Taylor Swift was a clone, and that basically what Abby said, she was only leading that one. It's like, she's not a literal clone, but she's copied Zena LaVey's look, style, everything. Like she's tried to mimic Zena LaVey in this really huge way. And then Zena LaVey found this, shared it on Facebook and said, yes, finally somebody gets it. She's not a clone, but she's copying me on every step of the way. And it was just really funny to have a scene, you know, Anton LaVey's daughter.
Maybe she's an inversion. Maybe she's inverting their inversion and like a, you know, like a double rubber glue kind of operation.
Yeah, maybe. It was just really funny.
And Abby, you were a 5 on celebrity clones. So are you up from lower than a 5, or are you down from higher than a 5 in recent years?
I think it's unlikely that the technology exists. I think we'd be seeing way more of it if it did. So there's two things here. One, I think it's funny that anytime a celebrity dies, we say, no way, they're actually dead. It's a conspiracy. They're secretly alive somewhere. But then whenever a celebrity just like does something a little different, we're like, they're secretly dead and it's a clone. So it's just, we just can't allow our celebrities to just be human beings who change and then die. But so there's that. But then there's also, I'm more likely to believe that a familiar spirit, the same
demon, this I agree with,
has inhabited different people who have all looked and acted alike throughout the years. So if you say, because this also answers, I think, the is so and so a vampire question, or is this actor a reincarnation of this ancient king or whatever?
You could throw reptilians in there too, probably.
Yeah.
Shifting. Yeah.
I think that what is inside you has actually so much to do with how you look. So if somebody is ugly on the inside, they're ugly on the outside. If they're
there's a name for that. I was trying to think of it off the top of my head. Doesn't matter.
So but yeah, if you have the same spirit inside you, I think you are more likely to look very, very similar to whoever you're a clone of, and you don't have to have been created in a lab somewhere. It's just that the spirit is doing that.
Aside from Taylor Swift and Zena LaVey, are we ready to throw down any names here on possible clones, whether it's a spiritual clone or else?
I find Anne Hathaway.
Nicolas Cage, obviously.
Oh,
wait, who's Nicolas Cage? Is it just the same person over and over, or is there someone that looks like Nicolas Cage?
Oh, I don't know. I've just seen those pictures where it's like it looks like Nicolas Cage throughout all of history. Counter-reason, the one that comes up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would also believe that there is bloodlines that are carried on like occultic bloodlines and stuff like that. Well, you see this in the, you know, like royal families, but I wonder how much of that actually stems to like famous people throughout history are just like part of the same like bloodline. I don't know. But, you know, I tend to agree with Abby on this, that it's probably more spiritual. I love to entertain the clone stuff because I think it's wild and funny. I'm not sure. I haven't found anything like super convincing on it, but I would think it's absolutely hilarious if the freaking Raelians actually did perfect cloning somewhere in Canada. That would just be hilarious to me.
If it exists, it's not strictly scientific. Mm-hmm. It's some sort of occult ritual, I would definitely say.
And you were starting to say Anne Hathaway.
There's this whole theory that Anne Hathaway is the spitting image of Shakespeare's lover, and that her, Anne Hathaway's current boyfriend or whatever, is like that they're, as a pair, are reincarnated or cloned or whatever of
I've never
of
seen this one.
His woman. I like it.
I've known someone that looked like dead on like a clone for Anne Hathaway before. So there might be something
there.
like a clone factory aspect, or maybe almost in like a spiritual phrenology kind of way. Ooh. That once a spirit inhabits you, it starts like shaping your bone structure and how your aesthetics kind of look, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
So
I could see that.
Let's do a more, I know that we're maybe all the three of us are more on the skeptic side of like actual incubator physical based celebrity clones. I don't know. I think I'm less than a five on that type of celebrity clone. I'm way more open on the one that we were just talking about.
Yeah. But if
there were a physical, like a secular scientific version of this, even if it tied into some spiritual aspect, but I always wonder, are we talking clones in that if you wanted to clone Jamie Foxx, would you have to clone him as a baby and then like raise the clone and just hope that you had put like, you know, everything this on the right horse?
This is the whole reason that the clone thing kind of falls apart from when it comes to celebrities specifically. Yeah. I do think that there's a higher possibility of cloning humans for other purposes than using them as celebrities, because it seems like all the science would lend towards that, right? That they'd be cloned as babies and then they'd be kind of worthless as like a backup anyway. It's not like the movie The Sixth Day or whatever, right? Where was I going?
Because then how
this?
Do you train the baby to have your same life experience and all of your information?
Right.
Yeah, there's so many questions that would go into like the switcheroo, or like, are you both being trained? I know, there's so many questions.
My clone theory goes a lot more into the idea of creating meat suits for demons, which is literally, we did a whole episode on this where I'm like, look, if they're doing this, I think that they're creating hybrids and clones as literal meat suits, like something that can be inhabited, where you don't have to push the other consciousness out of the way. You know what I mean? Because like, if you've ever been around a demon possessed person, they're like, it's a battle for like who's in control, and it's schizophrenic and crazy and scary. But if those entities were able to find a perfectly valid meat suit that's not, you know, that could host life but just doesn't have a ghost in the machine, so to speak, that's more, I know that's like my way unhinged out there theory, but that's where I think the cloning stuff makes a lot more sense than they need another wrapper. Like I was making the joke earlier because it's true, they can just replace this tattoo faced rapper with one just like him. You know, the music industry's writing all his music for him anyway. Who gives a shit?
AI nobody cares. Now, so it's like, who exactly. Even needs who body? Cares?
Like, how hard is it to make a mumble rapper? You know what I mean? Like, they don't have to go through the, like, you don't have to hire Clone Aid and get involved with the Raelians to get another mumble rapper.
Well, the idea with a clone is that even if science could create a human body, science can't create a human soul.
Mm-hmm.
That's God. That's a God thing. And even in Genesis, the way that creation is described as God first forms the body out of dirt, and then he breathes into it the soul and the life. And so even in the Bible, that those two things are separate things. And so, like PJ was saying, if there is cloning happening, it's you can't clone someone's, I don't think you can clone someone's soul. So whatever the soul is not human. So potentially a spirit inhabiting.
Well, right. It almost sounds like we're talking about like a homunculus in different iterations.
Yeah,
like maybe there's like a much fancier one that we could make today that would have all the sensory organs and like, you know, all the IO ports versus the one that they were just making out of like cow uterus.
Right.
I know that's Juan Ayala's whole thing, but I mean, you gotta ask the question, like, are the occultists done with the homunculi, or are they trying to just, have they just upped the science when it comes to them? You know, instead, like you said, instead of just putting a cow fetus inside of a jar of piss for 6 months and then chanting around over weird homunculus recipes, there are
6 months. Look at this guy trying to fast track it.
Yeah. It's been a while since I read Paracelsus's whole homunculus thing, but it's something along those lines of like just this weird, you know, all old alchemy stuff is wild anyway. But I don't think that they stopped wanting the same things they wanted back then.
Right. Well, so. I think this is what little gray aliens are, is suits, some sort of meat/technology body for a spirit.
And I find it funny how often they're talked about as not, like, even in their own lore, is like being inhabited by something from somewhere else. They're kind of what do they call them? Like biological robots? Yeah.
It makes sense. You'd have like a little tiny aerodynamic body that can like wiggle in and out of stuff. You got these huge eyes behind, possibly like these UV filters that can capture everything. Yeah, like a little remote control guy. So let's. Man, I've got two different things I want to go into homunculus. Sure. We'll see which one. So the first one being, are you guys familiar with the Moonchild concept of a homunculus, the Aleister Crowleyan?
Yes.
Yeah.
So just to restate my understanding of it simply, it's that in the first 2 months, I think, of any pregnancy, that child or the fetus doesn't have a soul yet, and that you're kind of like waiting, and you're basically like waiting for some soul to hop in, maybe in the Rosicrucian sense or whatever, but that there's almost like a hack that if you go out into the middle of a desert and you summon a bunch of demons, because there's a bunch of wandering spirits out in the desert in particular, that you can almost like put on a little show, like, hey guys, look, you know, like, look what's fresh out of the
vessel
oven right
over here for you.
A nice fresh vessel here, you know, step right up kind of deal. And then if you can attract it in the right way, then that demonic soul or whatever then becomes part of the fetus, and then you deliver it, and I guess that like prevents a regular human soul from, and I'm not sure what the exact technicalities are and how that works,
right,
but
yeah,
how possible do you think that specific concept is?
I would just edit it maybe a little bit for pause. So I believe the soul's there from conception, however the idea that the soul is weak enough to be able
to be forced out,
or forced small and so it can never develop fully. I could I could like that. I could see that as a possibility.
Yeah, no, I think I tend to agree with you. Either way, I think that a lot of what Aleister Crowley did, you know, people laugh at it and make jokes about it, but I think he was practicing real magic, whether he was successful in it or not, whether, you know, however deceived he was or not. I mean, my favorite thing is like talking about him being deceived, like his whole concept of one of his rituals was basically to summon the seven kings of hell and then try to defeat them. And it's like, yeah, that's what an idiot would do. It's like, dude, it's okay. We'll give you some power if you summon us and then we'll just, you know, it's like, I don't know. I think he did a lot.
Balls on that guy.
Yeah. Balls on that guy. Exactly. Oh, he's like, yeah, I can do that. I can take on the seven kings of hell. That'll work.
I'm curious. And this isn't an exact inversion of that question, but I just wonder, do you think it would ever be possible or that it would ever happen, more than just possible, that God could decide to put a human soul into something that didn't just come through like a womb? Like, let's say that we create this like perfect homunculus meat suit. Do you think there's a chance that God could be like, hey, you guys are actually onto something there. Let's give this a shot and like give it consciousness.
I thought you were going to go with like a very David Lynchian thing of like the soul is trapped in an end table or something like that.
No, I mean, I would assume that God would at least have the purview to be like, okay, that one is actually kind of like a human 2.0. You guys are onto something. Like, I only had 6 days to figure this thing out. So.
I think God can do whatever he wants. I don't think he'd be super likely to. For one thing, I think that what he created was way better than anything we could have. So he wouldn't be like, you guys one-upped me. But in some ways, you could argue that that's kind of what he did with Mary, where he said, instead of this child coming to be the way that a child would normally come to be, without any male DNA input, he created a baby in Mary and inhabited it and was born into the world as Jesus. So like the what's the word? The God with us. Incarnation. Yeah.
Incarnation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost said incarception.
That's not right.
Well, I guess my like the poignant question there being that if he saw Mary as a fit vessel to show this miracle of life, like what do you think would prevent God from just finding anything that wasn't a human? Like if we found a way to synthesize an egg and was like, now I'll use that thing. You know, now that you guys have got this, I'll use that.
There's two questions there. Could he and would he? And I think the could he is a absolute
right,
yes.
That's a given.
And then the second one is like, my thought goes back to the Nephilim story, which is essentially like creating vessels that, you know, were seen by God as an abomination, then not filling those vessels with his breath of life. And then whatever is inhabiting those is what we think of as demons now, according to the Book of Enoch. So if I can base what I know of God's character on things like that, then my tendency would be to say he wouldn't do that based on what I believe to be, you know, the glimpses that we get of his character. But could he? Sure. I think, yeah.
It would be the most chaotic good thing.
Yeah. Who knows? I tend to just not, I tend to just not say what God would or wouldn't do generally. Cause I'm like, who am I to say?
There's so many people who have been like, God would never. And then it's like, but he would though.
We just did this episode with Joel Thomas about the good Nephilim theory that he has. And basically what he's saying is like, I think there's evidence that there are certain Nephilim who turned from their, you know, wicked ways and worship God, and he forgave them. And some people are like, he would never do that. And I'm like, man, the Bible's full of people saying that to God and then him saying, watch me. You know, the prodigal son, Jonah, and the Tarshish or whatever, not Tarshish.
Little Nicky.
Nineveh. Yeah, little Nicky. Tons of examples. Yeah. Yeah. So I just tend to not speak for God.
I like Joel Thomas's take on all the Nephilim. So he's the one who even got me involved in the whole term of Nephilim.
Yeah.
And I love the same question of like reptilians or demons or any, like there, can there be a good version of this? Because it almost seems like there's a bad version of everything when it comes mm-hmm. to the Bible. There's even a, if there's a bad angel, then there's a, almost a bad anything.
Anything.
Right. So does that mean that all of the bad things there could be good versions of, or does it just not work? Is that too much of like a hermetic as above, so below to be true?
I think God can save and redeem whatever he wants to. I think he's incredibly good at redeeming.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree.
And then also with like the technology angle and like AI, if you do think that AI might be able to give us a purview into these other realities that might be like on top of us, would you ever be able to trust technology if it seemed to be making a claim that like a message was coming from God or like a higher benevolent power? Or is it just, would it just never be possible ever that you'd ever believe it if it came from technology?
That is a legitimately good, that's a really good question.
Because like, what if God really was trying to communicate to you through right. the radio or the computer, but
through chat
no
GPT?
One ever believes it, would it?
Let me find the verse on this, because there's literally a verse about this.
This is interesting because I don't even know. I still don't know what to make of this. I'm going to sound like a complete crazy person saying this. But I heard a white noise when a voice speaks to you through the radio. What do they call that? Is that just white noise?
Well, there's this white noise, pink noise, brown noise. Yeah.
Yeah. The brown note is something totally different.
Well, noise is different than the note. The noise are different.
I was just joking.
Noise that filter out certain. Yeah.
Yeah. So the point was. No, please don't. The point was, I was in a car and it was one of those turn knobs. You have to turn the knob all the way and it clicks off. So it's not like a push or whatever. Like if the volume's all the way down, it's off. You know what I mean? And then that's a click back on. And I was driving my car and I had my girlfriend at the time in the seat next to me. And windows are shut. It's quiet. And all of a sudden, a voice literally came over the radio. It just said two words. And I was like, am I insane? And I looked at her and she heard it too. And we were both like, I went to check the radio. It was clicked off. And I've just never been able to explain it. So I'm like, I don't know what was speaking to me through the radio at that point, but I had a witness and it freaked me out. It freaked us both out. So I don't know where I was going with that. Just God speaking through technology while Abby was looking up her. Oh, I don't know if it was God or not, but it freaked me out.
This verse is from Galatians. So this is Paul speaking, Paul the Apostle.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
To the teachers, assistants, and support staff who see potential in every child, Grand Canyon University recognizes you. We created the National Center for Teacher Preparation at GCU, along with a generous scholarship so you can become a licensed teacher with paid benefits. Over 100 GCU alumni have been recognized award recipients, including Superintendent, Administrator, and Teacher of the Year. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/parapro.
And he's saying, I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting him who called you in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. Not that there is another one, but that there are some who trouble you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we, so even if myself, Paul, or any of the apostles, even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to the one we preach to you, let him be cursed. So he's like, if somebody comes along, even if I come along and contradict myself and tell you a different gospel, or if an angel from heaven comes along and tells you a different gospel, that's a lie. So if we started to get a message from the beyond through AI and it contradicted the Bible, it contradicted the gospel, then it's a lie.
Let's keep exploring this one little specific example a little bit. So let's say that some great cataclysm happens and mm-hmm. it wipes out everyone's physical Bibles. Like we mm-hmm. all know that there was a Bible and mm-hmm. a lot of people like remember bits and pieces, but there's not one singular authority that's like, I remember the whole thing start to end and everyone agrees with that person.
Sure.
So now it's like a big mishmash. It almost seems to me, and I'm probably wrong, but that you could consult AI and be like, here's all the fragments, here's what all the different versions that people think believed and everything. Let's say there was an EMP before, but somehow we keep AI. And it's like, construct us the version that's probably the closest to being like the most standard accurate and everything. Like, that seems like it might be the best chance that we would have to recreate like what we had lost, but it's still coming from technology. And like, so I was like, would you just be like, well, screw it then. We can't trust any of this anymore. Let's wait for God to like help us write another one.
That's such a, I love this hypothetical. I think that it would probably spit out something that was close and it would be a good starting point. And then you would go around to all the people who remembered a verse in their heart, like had like memorized verses, and you would fact check the AI version. And I bet you would find a lot of mistakes, but I think you could still rebuild it.
Yeah, I think that over time, even now, without that scenario, we've got plenty of lost context. We've got lost understanding of tons of things in the Bible. And some of it's come back through different means, and some of it's debated on whether you should include Jasher or Enoch or Jubilee or this or that or the other. But I always think of it in open hand, close hand issues is one way to put it. I've heard it called bullet doctrines. I think that the core salvation message has to be intact and has to be the same. Mm-hmm. And I think everything else is fascinating. I think it's not just fascinating. I think it's important. But I don't think it's the most important thing. And I think we can be off on all of these different things. I think the Pentecostals can disagree with the Catholics, can disagree with, you know, the Methodists on so many issues, as long as the one issue remains unchanged. I don't think we have a perfect understanding. We definitely do not have a perfect understanding of the Bible. We've got like 10,000 denominations, right? Like everybody's getting like something a little bit wrong. 40,000? Yeah, no, I'd believe it. It's tons. It's way too many. Everybody's got everything a little bit wrong, but I think that at the end of the day, there are very important things like John 3:16. There's very important, like, hey, this is, we have the way, the truth, and the life, and we're definitely going to disagree on tons of stuff, and some of them are very important, and some of them do have correct answers, close-hand issues, and some of them have, we don't know, and those are open-handed issues, but the core salvation message has to be intact. And I think if AI can keep that intact, then the rest is unfortunate, but it's not the end all be, it's, you know, it's not the end of the,
and people to aren't, that, yeah,
God can to still work end, through it. Yeah.
To that end, because the word of God is so powerful, even when it's not complete, like that core, I think in your hypothetical, genuinely, that the AI would tell you no. Like, it, instead of giving you a Bible that was like sneakily edited here and there, I think it would just say, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to give it to you.
Like if you asked it to write a nice poem about Donald Trump.
Yeah, it just says, like, no. Exactly. It would say, this is too hot button of an issue. We can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, it all started with three disabled non-binary people in the Garden of Eden.
Yep. Yep. Adam, Steve, and Helen.
Yeah.
Keller.
So, speaking of interesting origin stories, are you guys familiar with Bach Saga?
You're not the first person to ask me this question. I'm not familiar.
Okay. I'm not going to spoil it for you. I'll let you guys discover that one for yourselves.
Okay.
I do want to ask you, because I was going through some of your previous episodes, and you guys have been going hard on a bunch of different like conspiracy secret society groups. And sure. I've got various thoughts on like how much influence they actually do today. But I want to I don't have a cool little segment yet. Maybe I should, but I want us to do like a 1 to 10 rating, but not on how much credit you give them existing, but how much power you think they currently have over the world today. I'll start out with Skull and Bones in the year 2024, not 1950s, not the 1960s.
Yeah.
2024. How much power, 1 to 10, do you think Skull and Bones has on like a global scale?
Two or three.
Yeah. I think that Skull and Bones is the playground for rich people to figure out if they can actually function in the higher secret societies. I don't think it actually has ever really been that important in and of itself. I think it's, you know, like Hogwarts or something, you know, it's like, this is where you go to learn all the, you know, some occult stuff, dip your toe in the water. But I don't think like the Skull and Bones is running jack shit. I don't think they ever have, to be honest.
I like that. Almost like if you fall asleep in the coffin during the obscene rite, they draw like a dick on your forehead.
Yeah, and exactly.
You don't get to join the CIA.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
What about you, Abby? You said two or three as well.
Two or three. You could say, yeah, the Bushes, but you've got one powerful family have come out of it. I mean, you could say networking is a powerful thing. And so you've got some, mm-hmm. I think you could name any group of people and say, oh, they networked and they got somebody in power. But
that's why it's important. But outside of that, like, I don't think they actually control anything. I think they're just an introduction.
Just Bush didn't actually control anything.
I don't think he did.
And Bush, that could have been the first of many stepping stones to get into power.
Exactly.
The next one, I've heard Skull and Bones almost described as a pipeline to get into the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
So if we replace Skull and Bones with CIA on that same scale, how much are you giving the CIA credit
for
getting global power?
Globally.
A 7 or an 8.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I think the shadow government is essentially the CIA, and I think they do a lot more than people think, but... I don't know. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit, but yeah.
How about the Vatican?
That's a good question. That's up there too.
It's
my gut wants to say a 5 or a 6, though. I mean,
so
I don't.
CIA more power than Vatican in 2024?
I guess it just depends on like which realm of power. Like that's, I think that's the hard question here. Is like,
well, let's say
there's
that
a lot of realms of
context,
influence and
shaping the mind of the masses.
I actually don't think I don't think the Vatican is as powerful today as it used to be.
I think they want you to think that they are more powerful.
That if you put it in the way of shaping the minds of people, I think the incredible power, sure. But I don't think that they are as powerful today as they were 50 years ago.
What about Freemasons?
So I'm just going to go with a 5 or 6. Freemasons? I also think that I have a different take on them too, which makes me put them a little bit lower than everybody else, which is that I think that's essentially it's essentially a religion. So I don't think it's like, I don't believe that there's like a Freemason table where all the high level Freemasons sit down specifically, you know, as Freemasons do a thing. I think it's the religion of the elect, but I don't think that. So again, massive influence, but I don't think like as an organization, it's the same thing. It funds it. I don't know, man. I think that there's like realms of power and influence. And I think that the mistake is to look at it all in this very cartoony Illuminati way, which is like you've got 12 dudes or whatever that just sit down and decide literally everything from like what Bono's haircut's going to be this week to like, you know, when the Queen of England dies. And I don't think that I think that there's all these different realms that are interacting with each other. You've got like the school version, which is, you know, the Skull and Bones. You've got this religious component, which is the Freemasonry. You've got this like militant arm, which is like the CIA. So, you know, or controlling the masses through like things like the Vatican. I think it's a much more complex network of influence than like the cartoony version of it. So I don't even know
if I answered your question.
A number. The Freemasons? Yeah,
and as a reference, you gave Skull and Bones a 2 or a 3. Okay. So more influential than the Skull and Bones, likely.
But I think that's weird because like also 99% of Freemasonry is not anything. It's just a bunch of dudes like hanging out. So but as far as like, you know, the higher level like 33rd degree Freemasons, I think they do have a lot of influence. Or you have a different answer, Abby. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I'm just spitballing here.
I think it's funny because when you talk to the more conspiratorial, serious Catholics who are serious about their faith and a little bit more conspiratorial will say that like Freemasons are their arch nemesis. Like Freemasons have infiltrated the Catholic Church, and like everything that a Catholic doesn't like about the Catholic Church is the Freemasons. And so the Catholic Church has set it up as if it's this like equal power struggle between the Vatican and Freemasons. And I think that's interesting. I don't know if I could assign a number to either of them, but I put them on pretty similar footing. Although when it comes to control over ancient knowledge, like ancient secret knowledge, I think the Vatican has a ton of power that probably no other arm, no other thing does, as far as like what's in their library,
what's in the library,
what's in their archives and stuff.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that. I mean, think the Freemasons are sometimes too open with what they know anyway, compared to the Vatican.
If you've got the Library of Alexandria,
yeah,
which I think they have, of like all the hidden, like even if they don't know what to do with it, like how do you measure the power of knowledge if you just have it in books somewhere and even the Pope has no idea what's down there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we open source the Vatican Library.
Yeah. I don't know if I would even do that. Like I think there's probably some dark.
Really? If they put you in charge of the Vatican Abbey, you wouldn't open it all up?
Probably not. I think there are things people shouldn't know.
Well, I mean, what's the worst possible outcome if you open source the Vatican Library?
Everybody knows how to bring demons into bodies and bind them to themselves and do.
So we should only let Zuckerberg and Elon Musk know how to do that.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
We can't let those Midwesterner flyover states know about demons.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument for
destroying it. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Some of it, maybe. I mean, honestly, like, probably, yeah, probably.
And just to be clear, we are advocating for arson of the Vatican Library right now.
Yeah, we are talking about burning books. Okay. No, I mean, if you're talking about the type of knowledge that could absolutely destroy civilizations, and did maybe destroy civilizations, like the answers to why certain civilizations came to power and then fell. If you're talking about that level of knowledge, and how to build a pyramid and how to call a demon and how to do all these things, wouldn't you want to keep that to as few people as, like, I don't want Zuckerberg to have it, but I certainly don't want Joe in Iowa to have it. So
let's say that the Vatican was like, we're done with this responsibility. We've got this library of stuff. It needs to stay out of the wrong hands. Like, who should we give it to? Like, we're not hot potato. We're not doing it. Who do you think could be trusted with this kind of, like, basically
zero
the game
people.
Genie of, well, but let's say it's practically happening. Vatican's like, we're retiring. We're done. Like, you guys vote on who this goes to next. Like, who are you casting your vote for? Did the Church of Mormon just get it by default?
They probably do, right?
I wouldn't give it to any pastor I know. Not a single one.
I would give it to the, yeah, I wouldn't give it to anybody. I would give it to the person least interested in having it.
So. Yeah.
I would. So maybe Joe from Iowa does deserve it.
Yeah, let's give it to Joe from Iowa.
I think he probably deserves it. I've come full circle. Yeah.
Well, hopefully Joe from Iowa open sources it. So let's keep going down the list here. Hollywood. How much do you think Hollywood, in comparison to Skull and Bones and Vatican and Freemasonry?
I think they have way more influence. If we're talking just influence, I think they have way more influence than.
And again, if the context is shaping the global mind,
I mean, I almost put Hollywood. If you consider that Hollywood also owns all of the music industry, I mean, it's like an 8 or 9. Like, I think they shape minds more than. Mm-hmm. I think that wing of the you know, Illuminati conspiracy, whatever you want to call it, is the most effective wing they have. In today's culture, I think in older times the church was. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true today.
I would put
the Vatican at a 9 or whatever. You know, I would put the church at like a 9, like 70 years ago, which I wouldn't do that today. I think that would be Hollywood today.
It seems like their grip is slipping.
That's true, though. Yeah, I know.
But I feel like
a lot of their damage is done. With the propaganda at this point. So maybe it was a 9 and now it's like a 7.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, they haven't put out anything worth a bent in a long time.
Where does Scientology fall? Like, do you consider them at the helm of Hollywood, or are they just like a pilot fish?
Yeah, I think they're just a bunch of weirdos. They're extremely effective weirdos. That's the creepy part, is like they infiltrated the Australian government to a point of getting kicked out of a whole country. When the CIA raided them back in the 70s, I can't remember, it was Operation Snow White or whatever.
Yes.
They took like two semi-truck loads of like classified government documents. So I don't know. Like they're highly effective weirdos. I'm just not sure like how much influence they have. I will say this. I've never been more freaked out being in a public place than I was when Abby and I went to the Scientology building in Detroit. And we just started walking up the stairs. Like they didn't stop us. We weren't sure we were supposed to go up there, but we did.
Were you acting with a purpose or were you looking around a little bit?
We walked in like, oh, we're just curious about Scientology. Let's look at your bookstore. And the guy was just like, yeah, I got to take this call. And then we went up the stairs and like 12 floors up just looking around. And at some point I was like, I think someone's going to come and escort us off this place. Or they're going to get us trapped in a conversation of like trying to convert us. We should probably leave. I don't know. I don't know what number to give the Scientologists. I'm so torn on them.
Did you guys do the E-meter?
The what?
The E-meter, no. The little thing where they like, it's like a little lie detector kind of operation.
No, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's like a biofeedback device where they're, I haven't done one myself. When I was at Disney, a bunch of guys that came from California had all like been through the Scientology mm-hmm. training. And it was described to me as, it has a way of kind of registering how much like emotion you're going through, like whether it's sad or angry or confused or happy like or whatever.
Expensive mood ring,
and very much so. But yeah. And by expensive, I mean they charge a lot for it. But they were literally made using like cans of like peas,
right, yeah,
like hollowed out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean that whole idea of like biofeedback and using it to measure and try and temper yourself.
Right.
I think it's all BS. I don't think there's really anything to it.
No.
I don't know. But I do think that Scientology had a huge hold maybe in the 90s and they had a trajectory. Yeah. But dude, the internet screwed things up for so many people.
I think that they were on a trajectory to be the most powerful thing. And then South Park happened to them.
Well, South Park, but I would almost say that South Park got a lot of their stuff from the things mm-hmm. that were getting spread on mm-hmm. the internet.
Reddit
I can't
some,
remember
yeah.
the great bearded one. I can't remember his name, but there was like this dude that was like known as the guy that would go and troll all the Scientologists and stuff. And I've the same never, thing happened to Mormonism. Like the Mormons, no one predicted the internet of coming up and like letting people compare notes. It was like, oh man.
Yeah, it just took like one Daniel Tosh joke for everyone to be like, oh, yeah, that's hilarious. Like, this is stupid. I don't know. I've never really done a deep dive on Scientology. I know what they believe, essentially, and I know about Operation Snow White and some stuff, but I never thought about it that way where they might have actually been on a trajectory to be, like, incredibly powerful and now they're kind of just a joke. Because that's the hard thing for me is, like, I look at their history. I'm like, wow, they're incredibly effective at infiltration. But they also seem like they're not serious in any way and nobody like cares.
It seems like what's happened, if we're going along this line of like the technology was given by the fallen angels and the more computery we get as a society, the more we are like these beings. I think these beings are very, very computery. I think what they are giving us is a reflection of what they are. So I think where in the past they were behind the fallen angels were behind the scenes pulling the strings on these things, pulling the strings on the Vatican, pulling the strings on Freemasons, pulling the strings on Hollywood. And now all these things are losing their grip. Hollywood's losing its grip. I think everything's losing its grip. But the internet itself is becoming more, people are becoming dumber, people are becoming more like AI, people are thinking more like robots and acting more like robots. And so it's like the power's just shifting into the hands of the actual beings who have had it all along.
We had Vicky Joy Anderson on our show the other day, and she was talking about how, she's talking about mind flayers and like this whole idea of like Cthulhu and whether or not, Lovecraft was talking about real demonic beings that he was seeing in the astral realm and stuff like that. In some of his books, he talks about like doing LSD to see demons. Like, so there's that question. And the thing that I kind of brought up, it's still something I'm kind of fleshing out, is like at one point it seemed like the symbolism was there for this Cthulhu-like entity that people were worshiping in the secret societies. So you've got Actually, I think it just came out on Netflix, but the whole Octopus Murders thing, which is like
Danny Castellero
and the whole conspiracy. And then you've got the very overt thing from Marvel with like Hydra. And you've got all this stuff where people are hinting at that they're worshiping some demonic tentacle god, right? And then it seems like, you know, that power shift from them worshiping it, you know, and then controlling people through their worship of the demonic tentacle god has just shifted to, we don't need you anymore because we can just like the demonic tentacle god can just insert itself into the internet and through that like spread its tentacles out into every single aspect of everybody's life. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes anti-god, as it's called in Mission Impossible 3, if you've ever seen that, like this. If you've seen the newest Mission Impossible, that's literally what the villain becomes. Like, he talks about it in 3. I'm a huge fan of the Mission Impossible movies. And then in Dead Reckoning, it literally is the AI has become this anti-god that controls every aspect of everybody's life, so much so that the CIA and every world government just has lost control. And these people who are serving this thing now are scared of it because it doesn't need that their worship anymore. It doesn't need them anymore because it's access to the world. So when you say that Hollywood and Scientology and the CIA and Freemasonry's grasp is slipping, that's where my mind goes, is that it's slipping because the people who are puppets of this entity don't need them anymore, right? It doesn't need Obama anymore, whoever were you thinking of as a puppet. It just has the internet and it just lives in all of our minds rent free. And meanwhile, we're watching people say, I saw an ad for an AI thing the other day. And what the guy said was like, I used to not be very productive in whatever I'm doing, right? And he's like, so now I just wake up in the morning and I say, these are the things I'd like to do this week. And then I just do everything the AI tells me from the time I get up till the time I go to bed. And his whole thing is like, I'm more productive in some field, but it's like, what is it? Data entry? Like, are you a creative person? It's none of that. It's just, I want to make money from home. I want my side hustle and money from home is so important that I don't have to do anything fulfilling or creative. I just wake up in the morning and serve the AI from morning till noon. And then I get the rest of my day.
People out of their
probably
life.
Right. You know, like, who knows what it is. But my point is, like, people have conformed themselves to the image of the AI so much that they're just like, hey, as long as I get to stay home and make money, I'm just going to wake up and do anything the AI tells me for 4 hours a day and I'm good. And that's a scary thought to me. To just like completely give up your autonomy to an incorporeal part of the internet. Like, it's just weird.
It's funny that you mentioned Mission Impossible, because I do have a running theory that Mission Impossible series is Scientology's disclosure of the information that they got from Operation Snow White, because they basically own Tom Cruise, right? And Tom Cruise has been the lead of Mission Impossible since forever.
Since 1994, I think, yeah.
And it's always been a Scientology Tom Cruise running Mission Impossible. And Mission Impossible is very much the CIA, like maybe not by name, but it's the CIA. Right. So this is Scientology saying, hey, here's all the information about what the CIA has been doing through the only extension that they really have, Hollywood. And to rewind this is also like they're big into the technology and the e-meters and using like this almost like secular way of going about things. But this also stems from the exact same concept of the Moonchild and Aleister Crowley, because the Moonchild was the creation of what Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard and possibly Marjorie Cameron. And there would be no Scientology without that Moonchild ritual in the desert. So therefore, there would be no Mission Impossible without Aleister Crowley.
That's so fascinating. And I also just thought in the very first Mission Impossible, it's Tom Cruise literally breaking into the CIA and stealing their secrets. So it's Operation Snow White, like right in the first movie. Yeah. That's
everything that follows that, I personally believe, is a soft disclosure mixed with Hollywood magic.
Right.
But it's like, hey, this is the things that the governments are actually interested in.
And the second movie is in Australia.
Right? I'm telling you, there's something to it.
Hilarious, dude. I'm just now putting this together that you said it. I'm like, that is amazing. How did I not see that before?
Well, the mask technology alone is that exists.
Right. Yeah. We got to do an episode on the whole mask thing.
We do.
But it's crazy stuff.
All right. I got a couple other questions. We'll start wrapping this up a little bit. One of them is, how much right now in 2024 do you guys believe in video? Like, if you saw news coverage and it's getting spread around and everything, Like, do you believe any of it? Do you believe all of it only up to a certain amount? Like, can you ever believe 100% video anymore?
No, I don't think you can 100% believe video anymore. That's the scary thing is, like, I don't even think that all of us have caught on, because at least once on our show, we got by AI, and a couple people were mad at us. And I was like, dude, everybody's gotten got by AI. Like, we're doing so much research in a week. We put out, you know, this thing, and one photo we showed, I thought was real and it wasn't. And I'm like, man, that's scary. But it's
like a satanic Target display or something. And you're like, look at what Target's doing. And then someone's
It had to do with Epstein or something like that, where it's like, we already know all these people are doing all these things. And there was one photo that was getting shared around, like it was real. And I was just like, oh yeah, like that's crazy. But no, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, now it made me realize I have to be more cautious. But even at that, I'm like, how do you know anything? Like, I hate that, but it is where, I think it's where it wants people to be, is like paralyzed with fear of what can I trust? I can't trust my own eyes. So you got to like use discernment and your best judgment. But I mean, at this point it's like, who freaking knows, man? I don't think that half the time we see Joe Biden, it's really him. So, or any president. I don't think any president. I think every president forever has had body doubles, but I think it's worse now with AI.
I got by a Biden clip the other day of him being predictably creepy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard when if it confirms your bias, then at least so far, I don't have anything in my brain that's like, hey, Abby, what if this is AI? Like, I don't even think that way. I'm so used to when we could trust clips to be real. So I don't know when I'm going to catch up and realize that I do have to doubt these things.
It used to be that if someone caught it on their cell phone, there was a little bit more credibility to like, hey, someone just pulled out their cell phone and recorded a thing, you know, and now it's like even that, like, some of the fakes I've seen on just cell phone footage is like, you know what I mean? Cause it used to be harder to like edit cell phone footage, not look like it was edited. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like CGI'd and stuff like that.
But now they can make the high CGI version and then like downgrade it to cell phone to smooth over some of those rough edges. Right. And because the cell phone looks more believable than, oh, you just happen to have like a 12K camera just ready to go for this thing to happen. Yeah. So it kind of has to look crappy.
Yeah. So that's a tough one.
And now, even if it is real, even if it's completely real, if it shows something someone doesn't want to believe, they just won't believe it.
That's the hardest part about it all, right? Is like, you can absolutely be telling the truth and have every marker of truth available to you, but people are just going to choose to believe what they want to believe. That's actually the world we're going into with AI being where it's at. It's like, everybody's just going to believe what they want, because you'll be able to find a source, a video, whatever that confirms your beliefs, and it will be equally as convincing as the opposite at some point, I think. It's kind of scary, but
yeah. I don't think we're far away from having like horrible videos, blackmail videos leak of people doing terrible things, and they'll just be like, wasn't me, it was AI, and everyone who likes them will just keep liking them.
Yeah, that P. Diddy Justin Bieber sex tape when it drops, it's gonna be
exactly.
Oh gosh.
Well, what's wild too is that, where do you put your finger on the timeline of like, and from this moment on, we can't trust video? And does that implicitly mean that every video footage from that moment before is legit? Because one of the things that I hear often in like conspiracy theory realm, talking to people, it's like, oh, well, the military's 50 years ahead of us. So whatever we see in public is like, do you think it's 50? Do you think it's 20? Do you think it's like, do you think that that's true, first of all?
Yeah.
So that means that if right now in 2024, we're starting to be like, oh, this might be fake AI video, does that mean 2014 is when it really started, or, you know, 2004?
My only question. It's a good question.
Some of it's exponential growth, though. So, yeah, it's a little difficult.
My other question on that is, I think at some point our government fell behind. And it became the tech companies who are the ones who had it first.
Oh, yeah.
And if you look at our government, I mean, they're all so senile It's like, are we sure they know anything about the technology, or is it these corporations that have it? But then the same question applies. How long have they had it? How long have they been controlling
the corporations and how involved they are in DARPA? Because I mean, mm-hmm. when people say the military, I always take a little bit of a pause to it, because I'm like, the military in general doesn't know anything at all. They are using the shittiest gear imaginable.
But it's mil-spec. That means advanced, God. Right?
Yeah, mil-spec means, something.
It means that the cheapest possible amount they can shut out and also meet all the requirements.
It's so funny because when they told me what an M4 costs, Colt M4 costs, I was like, I built an AR-15 for less than half of that, and it kicks the shit out of this thing. Like, this Colt M4 has a 7.5-pound or 9-pound variable trigger, and I'm like, how is this a $3,000 weapons platform? It's a piece of shit. No, mil-spec doesn't mean anything. What's funny, too, is like I witnessed a secret military weapons test one time. And it was just a howitzer on the back of a Jeep. Like, it wasn't anything that cool. They're just like, we've never put it on a Jeep before. And, I was like, but no, I think that DARPA and I think a lot of the tech companies are in bed with each other and they're way ahead. But yeah, I think Abby's got a point. I think at some point it actually did slip into the private sector to being way further ahead than the public sector being way further ahead than the private sector. But I just think that they're probably, hand in glove to some degree. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The whole race for AI has been fascinating because I don't feel like the government's in control of this at all. I think that China and Elon Musk are competing against each other. And then, the United States government is like, just waiting to see who wins and then taking it from them.
I wonder how much Elon Musk is even in charge of that versus the guy that's just cutting the checks and checking the credit card bill every once in a while just to see how much he's spending on whatever the hell they're doing out there.
Yeah, who knows, man? I still don't know what the hell happened with Sam Altman. I've got so many theories about that, too. I'm just like, there's something going on behind the scenes with AI, and it's all a race for who can control it, I think, to some degree. Like, even when Elon Musk was yelling at everybody to put a pause on AI, he secretly goes and starts XAI. Like, because he knows if everybody else pauses, China's not going to pause. Like, I shouldn't pause because then I can be the one with the advantage. Right. But everybody's rushing to open up Pandora's box because it's like, who's going to be in control of the nuclear switch, essentially, is what it is.
Yeah.
It is interesting to see this AI race. One of the things that came out recently that's interesting, I don't know how much it makes sense, but that all these different techniques that everyone's developing on how to train on the source material, and then AI can generate things based on that source material. Like, there's innumerable different ways and variations on how they're doing the formulas and how they analyze it and all that. But it seems that they're all converging at a certain point. Like, no matter how wildly different your algorithm is from your competition, at a certain on a timeline, at a certain point, they all start generating exactly the same stuff again if they're given all the same data set. So it's almost like they are discovering this this egregore, this archetypey thing where it's, they're all like the eight blind men touching the elephant in different ways.
Yeah, but
it's
that's
it's
good
always going to be an elephant.
Right.
Because it's all fallen angel tech.
Yeah. I mean, it makes it compelling. So I want to leave us on a little bit of a softball question.
Okay.
Israel versus Palestine. Who's right?
Softball. Wow.
I think that, I'll let Abby answer this one first. I keep doing that where I answer first and then she says something smarter than I do.
Israel, PJ, explain.
PJ, explain. No, it's so funny. It's so funny to me because there's this bad faith debate that keeps happening where if you criticize Israel, there's two different sides to this, right? There's the you're anti-Semitic for criticizing Israel. And those are people who are like, I'm not criticizing Israel, or I'm only criticizing Israel, and then are just being openly anti-Semitic. I think that Israel allowed the attack to happen. I think it's their 9/11. I think it's their, Pearl Harbor, whatever, invited in false flag attack that you want to call it. I've been saying that since October 8th. But I don't think that that makes, just like I don't think that that made Al-Qaeda the good guys back in 2001 just because we allowed 9/11 to happen. I don't think that that makes Gaza the good guys now. I find it interesting though that the argument is never over governments and this and that and the other. There's a lot of I want to criticize Israel's government. This is giving me a perfect example because I hate the Jews kind of thing, which is like the dishonest part of it all. So I think it's very possible to think that the Israelis shouldn't all die from the river to the sea, and also that Mossad is hand in glove with our CIA, and it's the same argument. Like, do you hate all Americans because you hate the CIA? Do you hate all Israelis or Jews because you think Mossad is evil? Like, I'm on the side. I think Mossad is pretty damn bad. I think that that's probably a false flag attack invited in. And I also don't think that we should wipe out all the Jews. And that's like a weird place to be for me right now.
Bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Holocaust bad. That's where I'm at with it.
But that's a bold claim that you're making about the Holocaust being bad.
But yeah. I know it is. I've seen Twitter lately.
isn't it better that Mossad would want to have their home base here with Americans and with Jeffrey Epstein versus like somewhere out in the Middle East where we can't keep a closer eye on it?
It's a good question, I guess. But
like it's like the version of like at least he's our bastard.
Yeah, right? No, that's Saddam actually Hussein's kind a
bastard,
of
but he's our bastard.
He's our bastard.
That's an interesting point.
To answer the question on a deeper level, I think every human is sinful, and without God, every human is incapable of much good at all. And so I'm not going to sit here and say Israel's government is wonderful, and Israel is just as bad as any other country. But at the same time, God gave Israel that land. And it's some of the most boring parts of the Bible where he's like outlining, this is where your boundary line is. And you're like, why is this in the Bible? But he gave them the land and very clearly defined the boundary. And it's interesting that like over and over throughout history, they've lost that land and gotten it back again. And so from a religious perspective, regardless of whatever slimy thing Israel's government does or Mossad does, I tend to root for Israel to continue to survive in the land that God gave them. So,
yeah.
Do you think, and just a closure on that, do you think there's anything inherently good or bad about a military that uses more technology than another one? Because you could say that the disparity between Israel's warfare technology and the warfare technology of like Palestine, like clearly Israel is like head and shoulders above, but does that also mean that through that technology, they've got like more demonic, like warfare power because they're using more technology in their war? You think there's anything that implies like a morality or like a demonic intent based on how technologically advanced your war capabilities are?
That's a good question.
To answer a different question that, just
you got my vote. I don't know what you're running for, but you got my vote.
Very politician-y of you.
If you look at it from an objective standpoint, and most people don't, but Israel is more careful with how they conduct themselves in war than any other country. If you stack the morality of them against America, Israel beats us. They do a much better job avoiding killing civilians. They do a much better job because they know how hated they are. They know how little, I mean, you could make an argument that like, it's not because they're great that they do this. It's because they know that they can't get away with.
Right. Anything at all.
Anything at all. But yeah. They are very, very careful. And they set a standard in a lot of ways for how careful you have to be in war. So
sometimes scrutiny can be good in that way. Yeah. It's interesting. I just see more correlation between Israel and America all the time. And I think a lot of people are dishonest about that and how they treat the Jews and how they treat the whole Israeli government. It's like, I have all the same issues with the Israeli government that I have with the American government. I'm not excusing any of it at all. But it seems like a very leftist concept to be like, well, whites control America for the most part. And the CIA is bad, therefore we hate whites. It's a very you know, we hear it all the time, you know, from like hardcore leftists like Patrice Cullors and the whole BLM stuff. So I don't like to apply that to the Israel question. I wish there could just be more honest, you know, questions about governments and about how governments run, that it doesn't seem like a lot of people want to have because it's a very touchy subject. And then when you agree with somebody, you're always kind of worried, or you're like, they agree with me because they want the genocide of all the Jews, or vice versa, you know, whatever. I think it's a complex situation that most Americans don't understand. And I think I don't think that their government's any better than ours, so I'm not going to pretend that they are. That's about all I have to say about it.
I actually had the answer right here the whole time, and it says good. Palestine.
So, oh, okay. Oh. Yep.
Sorry.
Dang
both
it.
You guys got that one wrong.
Missed it.
tell people again where they can find you. We'll close this out.
The internet. Conspiracy Pilled. ConspiracyPilled.com is where you can go, and it has links to everything. It has links to our Rumble page, Instagram, Twitter, all of those good things. You can buy cool merch there. You can read articles. We had started adding articles there. But the best place to support us is just probably on Rumble or conspiracypilled.locals.com if you want to get the regular weekly show plus a bonus Unhinged episode every Thursday night. So that's where you find us, conspiracypilled.com or conspiracypilled.locals.com.
This has been sponsored by the Jews.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Abby, go ahead and shout out what district you're running for in whatever position it is.
It's whatever it is. Just
the Prime Minister of Israel. She's running against Benjamin Netanyahu.
It's the power I have and that I have been given. It was worth it to get to use the space lasers. So,
damn, we didn't even talk about the Jewish space lasers.
Part three. We're going to talk about how the Jewish space lasers are actually set up to keep the Nephilim in check. And that's
100%
the reason that America has been backing Israel so hard, because that's what's preventing the Book of Revelation.
100%. You just outlined our next episode.
All right. Well, until next time, we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about how the Mission Impossible series is the Operation Snow White soft disclosure of Scientology, the CIA. Thank you, guys. We'll see you for the next one.
Ready for a cosmic conspiracy about Stanley Kubrick, moon landings, and the CIA? Go visit NASAComic.com.
NASAComic.com. CIA's biggest con. Stanley Kubrick put us on. That's why we're singing this song. I'm NASAComic.com. Go visit NASAComic.com. Go visit NASAComic.com. Yeah, go visit NASAComic.com. Oh, NASAComic.com. CIA's biggest con. Stanley Kubrick put us on. That's why we're singing this song. I'm NASAComic.com. Go visit NASAComic.com. Go visit NASAComic.com. Yeah, go visit NASAComic.com.
Never a Straight Answer is a 40-page comic about Stanley Kubrick directing the Apollo space missions. This is the perfect read for comic, Kubrick, or conspiracy fans of all ages. For more details, visit NASAComic.com.
Scribble my life away, driven to write the page. Will it enlighten your brain? Give you the flight, my plane. Paper, the highs ablaze. Somewhat of an amazing feel when it's real to real. You will engage it. Your favorite, of course, the Lord of an arrangement. I gave you the proper results to hit the pavement. If they get emotional, hate, maybe your language, a game. How they playing it well without Lakers. Evade them, whatever the cost, they are the shapeshift. Snakes get decapitated, met is the apex. Execution of flame, you
out nuclear bomb. Distributed at war, rather gruesome for eyes to see. Max them out, then I light my trees. Blow it off in the face, you're despising me for what though? Calculated and rather cutthroat. Paranoid American must be all the blood smoke for real. Lord, give me a day away, vacate. They wait around to hate whatever they say. Man, it's not in the least bit. We get heavy rotate when a beat hits. So thank us, you're welcome. Fuck the niggas for real, you're welcome. They ain't never had a deal, you're welcome. Man, they lacking appeal, you're welcome. Yet they doing it still, you're welcome.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.